Hello. You are listening now to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, and we are broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. So The Real World, it's UBC Film Society's radio segment, if you haven't tuned in before, where we talk about all sorts of things that are film related. As usual, I'm Lily.
I'm Emma.
And we've got a very, very special guest, my very own roommate.
I'm Sophie.
Welcome to the show, Sophie. How do you feel?
I feel very excited to make my debut. Yeah.
Yes, your debut. It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to book her. We try to contact her agent as much as we can, but yeah. We are finally able to get a handle on her.
Yeah, exactly. Just the hour.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, we'll jump into some ads first, but I'd like to let you guys know that the Film Society doesn't just have a radio show. We host like a lot of screenings, pub nights, beer gardens, film-related events all the time, and you can keep updated on those if you check out UBC Film Society on Instagram. That's where most of our updates like come through. So I would give that a look, and I'm going to get into some ads before we're back to talk about Nancy Meyers movies today. Alrighty, we'll be right back.
No matter your disability, you likely face barriers in your everyday life. At Neil Squire, we help break those barriers down by helping you access employment, technology, and the tools you need to live your life to the fullest. As a nonprofit organization, we empower people with disabilities all across Canada, and we are here for you too. Visit neilsquire.ca to learn more.
Royal Otis, live in concert, coming to the PNE Forum in Vancouver on October 22nd. Fresh off the heels of their debut album, Prats in Pain, and the viral cover of Murder on the Dance Floor for Triple J's Like a Virgin, don't miss the Australian duo on their biggest tour yet, Royal Otis, Glory to Glory Fall Tour. Tickets are on sale now at ticketleader.ca. TicketLeader.ca.
Are you someone in recovery? Someone struggling with addiction or disordered eating? Or are you simply curious to explore your relationship to alcohol, drugs, and other types of addictive behaviors? The UBC Student Recovery Community is a safe space to connect with others. The SRC provides many types of support, such as drop-in hours, recovery meetings, one-on-one support, and even has a dedicated recovery lounge. The SRC supports all pathways of recovery, from harm reduction to abstinence and everything in between. You can learn more at recovery_UBC on Instagram. And you can also contact the community at src.recovery@ubc.ca. Remember, you're not alone.
Listening pleasure, please join me, Marguerite, Sundays at 9 a.m. for Classical Chaos, classical music from around the world, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We'll see you then.
All right, we are so back, and as I mentioned before, today we are talking about Nancy Meyers films, or the NMCU, the Nancy Meyers Cinematic Universe, which me and Sophie just saw that on the internet and
loved it.
Now it's our term of the day. So about the NMCU. So Nancy's like a producer, she's a director, she's a writer, she does it all. were obsessed with her.
Oh, yeah.
And this was just an awesome idea. So this is like, Sophie wanted to talk about Nancy Meyers movies, I guess. Like, I don't know, were they a big part of your childhood or something?
Yes. Yeah, growing up, I feel like, especially The Parent Trap, I always loved them. But I feel like I would see, like, It's Complicated or just, like, random movies on the plane.
Yeah.
And I was always like, oh, my gosh, I just want to live in this movie. Or The Holiday, for sure, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're such plane movies. That's actually so true.
Yeah. I know.
I feel like that all of the airlines probably have her movies as part of their, like, the limited ones you can choose from.
I know, because I feel like there is just something so comforting about, like, any of them, because, like, none of the problems are ever really that insurmountable or scary.
Oh, yeah.
Like, obviously, they're not ideal, but it's always just kind of like, oh, well, like, the worst thing that ever would happen to any of these people is, like, they lose some of their, like, seemingly endless money.
Worst case scenario.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, pretty much.
Money in, like, Nancy Meyers movies is so insane as well.
Yeah.
Like, especially in, what is it, Father of the Bride?
I know.
They're acting like it is, like, dire for them. They're like, oh, we'll never be able to get anything together. She's gonna have this terrible wedding. And it's like, you have like a 4-car garage. Like, let's take a step back. Let's reevaluate.
And I think it's so funny, like, when they keep saying, like, oh my gosh, it's gonna be horrible. And they're like, okay, where will we put the swans? And, like, it's the most over-the-top thing ever.
I know.
It's like just their humble wedding that they're able to provide for her.
Yeah, so we're gonna talk a bit about Father of the Bride as our first movie, but, like, we can't talk about all her films. So maybe just to list a couple. So we were looking into, like, her filmography. She directed, wrote, and produced, just to give us a couple examples. The big three: For The Intern, 2015, It's Complicated, 2009, The Holiday, 2006, Something's Gotta Give, 2003. She directed and wrote The Parent Trap in 98. She produced and wrote Father of the Bride in 1991. So she's really doing it all, like, even just for one movie. She's, like, stretching herself across so many parts of the film. And we're only going to get the chance to talk about three today. We're going to talk about The Father of the Bride, The Parent Trap, and The Holiday. And we're very excited. I think, like, just for overarching, I like what you said about Nancy Meyers movies. You just kind of want to live in them. Like, just for an overarching, like, the feel of them. They're so comforting in that way.
I know. And I don't even know if it's just, like, the sets or if it could also just be the characters. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like in Father of the Bride, everyone, even when they're, like, stressed in bad moods, they're so funny
yeah.
and so relatable. Like, you're just like, oh, my gosh, what is Diane Keaton doing right now?
Like, we were cracking up at her.
Yeah.
The Father of the Bride, we just watched it on the weekend.
Yeah. Communal real world watch.
It was a good one.
Crazy. Yeah, that's definitely a good movie to put on at, like, a holiday party, like, some sort of, like, sleepover, something lighthearted, you know? You're not, like, wanting to sit your friends down, like, explain the meaning of something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, you know, not, like, a David Lynch movie. Like, you're not sitting them down being like, yeah, this is, you know, this actually represents society.
Yeah, totally.
As a whole. But then, like, this movie's just like, yeah, there's swans at the wedding.
No, that's so wrong? True. And while they are, like, I do agree they're kind of, like, easier watches, or not easier watches, they're, like, comforting.
Mm-hmm.
But you can read into them a bit more, which I think is what's so cool about them. And like you were saying, like, they're just great laughs all the time. But what I think is so awesome about her movies that I was noticing is she's just got this masterful balance of so many things going on. Like, she's just mastered her craft, really.
Yeah.
Like, there's this great balance in all of her films, I find, between going for the laugh, but also, like, really, like, emotional gut punches as well. I also think there's a really cool balance that maybe I'll talk about in some of the other films, between elegance and comfort. Like, there is a lot of elegance to, like, Sophie was talking about, like, the sets and stuff, but also a lot of them are really comforting. But she finds that balance and she does it so perfectly. And then also one that I think is really interesting is she finds this balance between a lot of, like, her leads are female, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's telling a lot of feminine stories, but she finds this balance between nostalgic, like, playful female youth, but also mature, like, elegant,
yeah,
grown-up femininity,
yeah,
which I think is so, so awesome. Anyway, so I just think she's the most balanced person on earth, and I'm obsessed with her.
I know, and I think it's really cool, too. I think this one, the director was Charles Shire, who was her, at the time, husband. And
this is Father of the Bride,
yes,
right?
Yes, for Father of the Bride. And I think that, like, it's really cool that even though he was directing and she, well, she was still producing and writing it, so obviously playing this massive part, it's interesting to think about how, like, that dynamic might have been with working with someone so close to you and still being able to bring, like, everything that she then brought to her later films where, like, it's so Nancy Meyers. And you can just see that, I don't know, I feel like she knew exactly who she was and what she wanted to bring to all of her movies from the very beginning. And I think that even the fact that, like, she... In this movie, there's George Banks and his wife, and I actually don't remember what his wife's name is, but she also...
George Banks and Nina Banks.
Nina Banks, yes, that's Nina. And Diane Keaton, and she owns a successful business as well, which I think he only references once in the movie, because we know he runs his, like, shoe factory.
He's so humble.
Yes, he's so humble. And then he's like, we're both, like, business owners, we should be able to plan this wedding, whatever. And it's just kind of this throwaway comment, but I love that, I don't know, I feel like in... that time, not that the 90s were like this olden days time, but I feel like in that time it would have been common for them to be like, oh, she was at home with their young son. Mm-hmm. But instead, no, she's running this successful business at the same time and throughout the entire movie being like the voice of reason in their relationship, and really just like, I don't know, I love the way that she presents, even though also we were laughing that Diane Keaton is for some reason always giggling at something.
And her eyes are bulging out like constantly.
So keyed up. It's crazy.
No, like, I'm obsessed with it. Most reactive performance on earth. Yeah, anything happens and she's there.
She's always got something in hand as well. Like, if it's like
she never stops.
Like, glass of wine or like a mug or something. Like, she is constantly holding things. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's just what's like tethering her to this plane. Like, otherwise she's just going to like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and that's so true, because unlike what we're going to talk about in The Parent Trap or The Holiday, where like our main characters are basically all female, in Father of the Bride, the father is a central character, but the spin as a writer that she gives on it is he is kind of our like overwhelmingly like emotional character. Mm-hmm. And his daughter's the one who's gone through, even though she's so young, she's like... come back from her study abroad, and she's very kind of found a way to be level-headed, which apparently is very un-Banks like as he says, like, wow, I was overwhelmed by my daughter's like level-headedness because she's grown and she's matured as a woman. And he's the one who's constantly freaking out the whole movie, which it's not to say like men freak out more than women or women freak out more than men, but like seeing the flip of what's so often represented is like, like, think about it, what's it called, like Bridezilla, like all of these stereotypes of like the woman being the one who's so overwhelmed by her emotion. But like, we see that flipped, and also not in a mean way, but in like a really funny way with Steve Martin.
Yeah. And I also think that like, what's kind of cool about it is that he like, I don't know, you can imagine that the way this movie could be spun would be like, she's demanding, like, I need the swans, but we don't really see a lot of that, even though like, I don't know, I assume she must be hoping for like this grand wedding, but she's kind of like, oh, I would like this, or I kind of want this cake, but we never see her portrayed in this like negative, like you said, Bridezilla, like, way. And it's more just he reacts to everything. He's so overwhelmed because his daughter is getting married that like, I don't know, even though the wedding does end up being a little bit over the top, it's not like her fault, or as if her and Nina are like trying to create this like massive grand affair, that he's just being like the voice of reason
where,
and
also, if you haven't gathered the plot, which you should have, because the plot is literally just he's overwhelmed by his daughter getting married. That's the plot. If you haven't seen the movie, so awesome, and you should. But Steve Martin is just caught off guard by his young daughter like coming back and saying she's engaged, and he's like finding himself very reluctant in this situation, letting his daughter and like her childhood, I guess, go and mature on its own. But yeah, it was my first time watching it this weekend. What were your first impressions, Emma?
Oh, it was also my first time
watching
it this weekend, and I am not, as far as like rom-coms or like 90s genre goes, I am very inexperienced in that world. Like, the few I have seen are like, you know, very few and far between. Like, you know, I've seen the heavy hitters like Notting Hill or whatever.
Okay,
obviously.
Yeah.
I've got like, you know,
good,
a bit of a base to stand on, but I'm not like in the genre.
Yeah.
So I think like seeing this sort of version of it, it was really interesting to me, kind of the look of it. Like, obviously, it looks like a 90s movie, but in this very like sort of clean and like very like editorial kind of way. Like, all the houses, they there's such a unique look to each of them that feels like you could have just like pulled them out of some magazine. And I feel like this is a kind of a through line in a lot of like Nancy Meyers films, is like the houses and like the setting is like a character in and of itself, kind of how it is like just portrayed. It's like, yeah, it's in the background, but it's in this like, you know, in this way that's not overbearing, but you're very aware of the setting and its implications within the larger realm of the story. And I think this one was just like, it was really interesting in how it played with a lot of like white tones, I felt like. Like it's like, oh, this movie about a wedding, and there's a lot of like sort of like pale color tones overall. I think that was like really cool. And obviously like the performances, like everyone is top notch in this damn movie. Every single person is absolutely killing it. Like, this is just such a peak time for so many of these actors. And I don't know, it's always a treat, I think, like to see Steve Martin and Martin Short get to like play off of each other.
Yeah.
And they are so good in this. Like, God, totally. Love those guys.
And you can feel that like the writing was like meant for them in a way, or at least they made it their own, because it felt like they were just given so much room with the comedy to kind of do their own thing. Like, you still got those like signature like slapstick moments and expressions from both of them that you see in some of their other films and performances, which I'm not really sure the process between like as Nancy Meyers was writing it, if she had them in mind or something. But the slapstick element I really loved as well, like especially in this one scene when they go to the in-laws' house, and that was like the most obvious slapstick moment of like physical comedy at its finest, because like Steve Martin is like snooping and tearing apart this house, like, but it's all accidental but all also really intentional, and has this physical element of him falling in the pool, like all of these really classic moments. But he is just the absolute best. You can see him putting everything, like, imagine having to do that take more than once, like, but he can fall in the pool as many times as you need, and you think you're watching it basically live for the first time. He's incredible.
Yeah, I know, it's so true. Even like thinking of like the house as a character, I really like the point where like when all the furniture is being carried out of the house by Franck, and Steve Martin is like, oh my god, and it's kind of feels like he is the house. Like, there's that intro scene where it's like, I love this house, I've seen my kids grow up in it, and then you can kind of imagine how he feels with his daughter getting married, which, again, I don't know why he takes it so to heart. And I feel like some of it is pretty outdated.
Yes.
But, I don't know, seeing, like, all of them carry all their furniture out, and then they're like, oh, we're going to bring new chairs in. And he's like, why can't we just leave the chairs that we already have? And it's kind of like the house, the physical things that are happening to the house is how he feels with, like, all this change coming.
Yeah.
And it's not actually about the wedding. It's more about, like, Annie's leaving and all of those start.
I love that. I didn't even think of that, like taking that part of him away. Yeah. Wow, Sophie. Please come on every week.
Yes.
No, but that's so true, because, and that comes back to what I was saying about like balance of the funny but the heartfelt, because you've got this really funny line that Franck delivers as he's like, oh, wow, the house is beautiful. Everything must go. Go, 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 go. Like, everyone take everything else out. And they have just these quick one-liners that you're like, oh, my God, it's so ridiculous. And he's got this awesome accent. And he's in these, like, extravagant little suits. Just perfect quick delivery for a funny line. But then it also represents, like, a deeper, like, sentimental note of, like, oh, it's perfect. Everything's going. Mm-hmm. Like, his little daughter, like, their childhood together, that was all perfect, but it's changing. Wow.
Yeah, and I think this movie can be like whatever you need it to be, because I've only seen it one time before. We all watch it together this weekend. I saw it on the plane like 1 month ago. I've been really in my Nancy Meyers. And when I saw it, I was like, literally, there. What's that fact where when you're at a high altitude, you're way more likely to cry, like something about your tear ducts? And during that montage of like Annie growing up and being like a little girl and then eventually getting married and like graduating and stuff, I was like sobbing on the plane. And then we rewatched it, and obviously it was sad, but like I was more just like smiling, like feeling comforted by the movie. And I love when movies can be like, if you're in the mood for like a good cry and like to feel really sentimental, like it can be that for you. But then it can also just be like the easiest watch in the world and just like giggling when I don't know, he keeps thinking that, like, Brian is on America's Most Wanted.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so good.
So good.
Also, the soundtrack was so awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
We were trying to pick, like, what to play today, but it was so difficult because every song is just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
One iconic one we wanted to play for sure, for sure, for sure is Chapel of Love, the Dixie Cups. So we'll play a little tidbit of that now and circle back to Father of the Bride for a little bit longer after that. But here you are, Chapel of Love. Oh, such a good one.
A classic.
A classic. Mm-hmm. That's just like one of the many songs that we loved, loved, loved. Before we move on to the next Nancy Meyers movie we want to talk about, we were also talking about in the film, I don't know if we talked about this the day we watched it or like upon reflection, but like we were saying already, there's not really like some sort of huge villain or like horrible thing that goes wrong in her movies or like in her screenplay, for example, for this one. So here, like, the villain I think falls under like the sentimental note that they didn't choose to make the villain like the in-law or like Brian McKenzie, the guy that the daughter's gonna marry. And I read something that like initially, like the initial story was supposed to be written with him as like a rebel biker. Like he was supposed to be a bit more of like a contradictory character to like the morals and the values of this like perfect American family. Like he was supposed to be more like rebellious. But then like Nancy and whoever else, like the other writers who contributed, Shire, Francis Goodrich and Albert Hackett, whoever decided was like, no, we're not doing this. He's just going to be kind of a regular guy.
Yeah.
Which I kind of really like because it doesn't give this easy way out of like, that just makes it funny that like she's marrying this bad boy. Like it doesn't take that route. It takes like more of an emotional route where like the villain or like the evil of the story is like change and aging and like feeling nostalgic for what once was, which I think is a much deeper note that they're able to hit on.
Yeah. Like gives you something to really like think about beyond just like the typical like, oh, bad boy, you know.
Yeah,
she's marrying someone her dad doesn't approve of. Like I feel like it does give the story a bit of a like deeper sense. Then you're not just like playing off your typical stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I feel like it's a lot more relatable because not all of us know like some sort of bad boy on a motorcycle who's like invaded our lives. But even if like you're not getting married, we've all gone through periods of our lives where like something will change and someone will go away and everyone has to deal with that in their own ways. And like most of us aren't as accepting of it as Diane Keaton is in this movie. Like, I relate a lot more to Steve Martin when it's like, oh my gosh, no, like you just want to hold on so tight to like what you see as like the perfect present instead of like move forward.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good. We also wanted to play a little bit about Darlene Love's song, Today I Met the Boy I'm Gonna Marry. So we'll play a little tidbit from that song because it's so good. So here is, I don't know if it's like, Today I Met is in brackets. Are you supposed to say that?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. So. Today I Met the Boy I'm Gonna Marry. Here you are. If you're not like dancing, singing right now, I don't know what you're doing. That's the best song I've ever heard in my life.
So good.
It's so upbeat. It makes you feel so like warm and comforted inside, just like a Nancy Meyers movie.
But if you know the scene, you might be crying.
That's
the scene I cry.
That's the scene I always cry to. So there. Wait, which scene is it again?
It's like the montage of her growing up.
She's just a girl.
Honestly.
All right, so that was Father of the Bride. We love it. The next movie we're going to talk about is The Parent Trap, 1998 version. Let's be clear.
Yes, Lindsay Lohan.
Yes. Her debut film.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Which also I learned that the girl who plays the daughter in Father of the Bride, it was also her debut film as well. So again, perhaps Nancy Meyers like highlighting young women's careers, launching them.
It's incredible. Incredible.
She's done great things.
Oh, I can't believe, wow, Lindsay Lohan, I thought she started earlier for some reason.
No, this was Lindsay Lohan day one.
Wow.
How are they considered, like, 1,500 actresses? And, like, one of them was Scarlett Johansson.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Could have been living in a very different world.
Totally.
But Lindsay Lohan wanted out.
That's crazy.
You know, twins, which is also crazy.
Yes. Okay. So if you haven't seen, the plot is identical twins. Lindsay Lohan, spoiler alert, she plays both twins. She doesn't have a twin. Sorry to disappoint. Annie and Hallie, keep those names in mind for later. We've got so many fun facts coming your way today. Annie and Hallie, they're separated at birth, and then they're each raised by like one of their parents. So Annie's raised by her mom, yeah?
Yeah.
And Hallie's raised by her dad. The parents just don't tell them. We're not really going to acknowledge how problematic is like an understatement.
It's an insane custody agreement. No lawyers were involved there. No.
But we'll just ignore that because that's what's meant to happen. And anyway, they discover that they have a twin at summer camp and they try to bring their parents back together. They plot to bring their parents back together. Initial thoughts, when did you watch it for the first time? What does it mean to you, Sophie?
I don't even remember when I watched it for the first time because, like, I can't imagine my life without this version of The Parent Trap. I remember watching the, like, is it 61 version, like the old one. And I remember watching it when I was, like, probably 7 or 8 and just thinking, like, oh, why would they redo the Lindsay Lohan one? And then being explained that this has actually made a lot before the Lindsay Lohan one. But I just love this movie. It has so many things that like are so special to me. I think they do such a good job at representing summer camps mm-hmm. and like just the magic that it is like being a girl at an all-girls summer camp. And yeah, that's really special to me. And then I think that, I don't know, the parents and their homes, again, to bring it back to like Nancy Meyers and her ability to like make a house a character. I think it really fleshes out like the lives that they've led up to this moment mm-hmm. with like Annie living in her beautiful little townhouse in London mm-hmm. with Elizabeth James, which is just so fun. I love that whole side of things. But then, of course, I think I actually like Hallie's life better, where they have those like that rolling Californian mansion on like a vineyard.
Oh my gosh.
So fun. And yeah, this movie is just honestly probably my favorite movie of all time. I love it so much.
Again, Money So Much is so funny though, because it's kind of, they're not trying to make Hallie's life seem humble, but like in the way she like comes up and she kind of like is a little more like casual and like slang than her counterpart who lives in London. But like meanwhile, like she lives on this vineyard.
Yeah.
She's got like a pool. Her life is crazy too. Like they're all so stupid rich. Okay, yeah. The vineyard's like going under or something. Like
No. Meredith Blake is trying to marry the dad for his money.
Yeah, so they're rich.
Yeah.
Let's regroup. Everyone in all of these movies is stupid rich.
It's insane. Yeah, the amount of wealth. And they'd be like, oh, she's just a little girl from California. It's like she is living on a vineyard. She lives in like Napa.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway. I guess you can reframe that to not like, I'm trying to think of it not as they're trying to paint the London life as rich and the California life as poor, but kind of coming back to this balance, like these two sides of the coin of a more like modern or like elegant life versus like a comforting life, which you can see like mm-hmm. the two lives are different. Just the visuals, the colors that they use, like warm colors versus neutral colors. We see that a lot in The Holiday as well, like neutral coloring versus like warm comforting patterns and stuff like that in the set. But I agree, I like the vineyard life.
Yeah, you're on that vineyard life grand set.
Yeah,
I like the London life. Gotta say, when I watched it the first time, I was like, yeah, the London life seems pretty solid. But I did also watch this so insanely late. I didn't see this movie until I was in grade 12. Yeah, I kind of like grew up without like Disney Channel, like this sort of like genre of movie. So like watching it like that late, I think some of the magic was kind of lost on me just because I was so much older.
Yeah.
But like looking at it, like, it's one of those movies where I can watch it. It's like, oh, if I watched this when I was like 8 years old, this would have been my personality
for
like, like 12 formative years of my life. So I think, yeah, there's definitely something you said about like the timing of certain movies.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those movies that if any of you listeners out there have kids, show this movie to them while they're kids. Don't make them wait till they're in grade 12.
Don't make them wait. It's a disservice.
Yeah.
But also, I think what's so cool about it is there's like a lot of parts that are relatable. Like I think what you were saying about Father of the Bride, there's like intentional choices to make it more relatable than not. And while like maybe being really rich and like a wedding dress designer in London isn't the most relatable thing for us all, I think whether you've gone to summer camp or it's that you have a sister or just a sibling or anything, like there's a lot of points that I feel like you can connect to. Like I guess, Sophie, like you went to an all-girls summer camp, so that must be like a major point. But all three of us also have sisters, so yeah. I guess that's like a really important, relatable point of like that bonding.
Totally. Yeah, and I think their relationship, it's so cute because obviously like they're portrayed as such opposites, like Lindsay and Lindsay. But as Annie and Hallie, it's like we have the really posh, like she's so stuck up a little bit and elegant, and then we have Hallie who's like almost a bit mean sometimes and like very country girl California, like I don't know, just this, both of these very stereotypical different girls, and at first they hate each other, and I think that part's so funny. But I love that the fact that like when they discover like, oh, we're sisters or we're twins, they're like, okay, twins. we're immediately best friends. We're going to like learn everything about each other. We're going to swap lives. And I just love, I feel like that's so true about the way that it feels to have a sibling, is that you can have these, not that they knew that they were siblings originally, but I don't know. I feel like it speaks to that like enemy. You can think that this is your biggest enemy in the world and you need to take them down. And then 5 minutes later, you can be thinking like, what would we do without each other? And like
best
piercing each other's ears
in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Me too.
Oh, and that like makes me think about such a great scene that we were looking up the other day. We just rewatched it of the one where they are teaching each other like their way of life. So this is like the moment where it clicks. No, Hallie, it makes us twins or whatever that line is, and then they have to kind of like teach each other the way that they grew up so that they can eventually do a little swap and then set their parents up together. They're trying to like learn about the other's life, and then it's all this montage of them is all to the song Do You Believe in Magic. Anyway, so we'll play a little bit of that, and that's from The Lovin' Spoonful. So here is Do You Believe in Magic. Oh, such a good montage. And they're like on the dock kind of in golden hour of camp. Like I can just really picture like being at a camp on the dock on the water, like doing handshakes with your best friend turned sister. Come on.
It's ridiculous.
It's the dream.
And I just feel like the music that she chooses is so obviously intentional, but like it really does transfer you to this like magical world where like you feel like you're there and you just do want to like dance around and listen to these songs. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Wait, do you have, what, Annie and Hallie, these names come from a very specific place.
Yeah, so Nancy Myers and Charles Shire's daughters are named Annie and Hallie.
Oh my God.
And so they named the twins in this version of The Parent Trap, which is originally based on, like, there's the other Parent Trap movie, but then there's also an original book from 1949 called, like, Lottie and Lisa. And it's this German novel, like, same plot. But they named the girls in the movie Annie and Hallie after their daughters. And then at the end, like in the credits, it says for Hallie, which is really cute. But it makes me wonder, like, why is Annie not being
credited? It for Hallie?
But I guess Annie gets Father of the Bride. Because I think originally in the original Father of the Bride movie, the daughter's name is Kay. So I think they just are always naming the girls after their daughters, which is really cute. And
what the
I really like that, actually. If I were their daughters, I'd be like, yep, as you should. But yeah, I love that they named those girls. And then Hallie Myers Shire is in the movie as Annie's best friend, the one who's like, want me to deck her for you, like when Hallie's being really mean at fencing. That's like acted by Annie Meyer Shire, and her name supposedly in the movie, I don't remember them ever saying her name, but her name is Lindsay. So, like, Lindsay Lohan plays Annie, and Hallie, and then Hallie plays Lindsay. So they did kind of like a little meme thing.
That's crazy.
So cute.
Oh, I love that.
I know.
Why are my parents never doing that for me?
No. Me neither.
Dedicating a movie to me, giving the names of the main characters my name, and then also casting me.
Yep.
I guess when you're producing, directing, writing, doing it all, if you're that successful, you've might got the liberty to put your daughters in. But she's good. She kind of has a line and everything.
I know.
She's part of like the prank that they pull. She gets like the whipped cream or like shaving cream on her head.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
I love that.
I do too.
Oh, and now I want to read that book.
I know. Lottie and Lisa, me too. I didn't even know it was based on a novel for today. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I also really love the side characters in the Parent Trap. I love how they're the ones who realize that the girls have swapped. Like how Chessie, when Annie is like pretending to be Hallie, is the one who actually recognizes that like, you're behaving so weird. Why are you being like this? And I think it really speaks to like, I don't know, it's not always your direct parent who is the main person in your life. Like, who's the person who would recognize if you swapped with your secret twin across the pond?
And yeah.
I don't know. I think it's so sweet. Like, I think all those side characters, Nancy Myers does really well at like making them not just, I don't know, one plot point, but actually central to like everyone's relationships. And then in London, it's the grandfather who like is like, what's going on here, young lady? And he discovers that it's Hallie as Annie. So it's not even like the mom or the dad who figure them out, which I don't know, I kind of like that. I think that it like really speaks to, it's not just the parental relationships in your lives that know you the best. Mm-hmm. Or even if they do, there are often going to be times when they might be preoccupied with other things, like Meredith Blake. And you got to rely on others.
She's such an iconic side character, though. I was thinking about this because I feel like I've even seen trends. Like, she became an icon on her own and against all odds. Like, maybe not against all odds. She's given a pretty glamorous look. Her outfits are so cool, and she's always got like shades on and like little heels and stuff, but she becomes like this comedic element that I feel like people have really made into an icon. Like, I'm having a Meredith like Blair era or something like that, which I really like how she's just like come into play in that way and the relevance of her as a side character.
Totally.
Which also I think like contrasts like her and Elizabeth James as like different representations of like growing up as a woman, maturity, not necessarily pinning them against each other, but all just in contrast to like the youthfulness of childhood, like summers and stuff like that. I think is a nice contrast as well.
And I love that they both hold their own. I mean, like, Elizabeth James has her, like, massive, like, fashion empire, like, wedding dress takeover in London. And then, like, even Meredith, like, even if, like, okay, she's, like, a gold digger, but, like, she knows what she wants and she's, like, doing something
she's
to get
hustling,
it.
You
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
She is.
Again, Nancy Myers, just, like, she's killing it.
Spotlighting women.
Yes.
Always.
In all of their ways of getting money.
And also the butler is a pretty relevant character as like a caretaker for Annie, and then also takes care of Hallie once they switch. And a really iconic song that they do their handshake to is Soulful Strut by Young Holt Unlimited, which we'll play a little bit of for you right now. Here you are.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, I really want to learn the handshake now. It's such an iconic little song. I love that. All right, so we just talked about The Parent Trap. If you're just tuning in now, we're about to talk about The Holiday, 2006. This was written, directed, and produced by Nancy Meyers.
Triple threat.
Yeah. She went all in for The Holiday, and I love The Holiday.
Me too. I feel like you can so tell, again, it has all of her typical elements. Like, it has, like, the houses and the soundtrack and just everything feels like a warm, cozy hug. And I feel like it, well, obviously, it's the only one that is actually directly set, like, during the holidays. Mm-hmm. But I feel like all of them kind of sometimes feel like holiday films. But I do love that this one, like, you have, like, I don't know, their New Year's celebration to wrap it up and everything. It's like, I don't know, I think that sort of celebration fits so well into her general, like, set design and everything that she does to make something feel warm and cozy.
Totally. And again,
California and England, I don't know, like, what connection she has there, but she has two girls, one from California, one from England. Again,
jeez,
just like Parent Trap.
What's this obsession? What's going on there? The Holiday is so good. I think it was one of those movies that, like, I put off watching a little bit based off of, not to judge a book by its cover, but, like, the poster that would just keep coming up on Netflix, I think it was on. Because it's just kind of, like, all the little squares.
Yeah.
Am I thinking of the right poster, right? It's, like...
Or is that...
Love Actually.
Love Actually.
Maybe I'm thinking of Love Actually.
I think you might be.
Okay, okay, this one just... It doesn't have the little squares. It has the two... rectangles.
Right.
Oh, yeah, big difference. We're learning geometry today on The Real World.
Let's be very clear.
Huge.
So it has just Cameron Diaz and Jude Law, their faces, and then the bottom was, I don't know why I'm having to explain the poster so hard. The point is that I saw the poster a lot and I never watched it because, like, it didn't really catch my eye, to be honest. It just had the faces of the four main actors.
Even Jude Law didn't catch your eye.
Well, I did finally watch. And so it has Kate Winslet, Cameron Diaz, Jude Law, Jack Black. So crazy, this cast. And I think I read that it was, like, written with all four of them in mind.
Wow.
Like, it was, like, made for them. Wow. Which I'm obsessed with, and they're so, so amazing. I wish I didn't put it off because I love it. It's so good.
I know. It's such, like, it's just such a classic. I feel like, I don't even remember when the first time I saw it, but I remember we watched it last year, and I really enjoyed it. I think I'd only seen it maybe a couple of times before and when I was a lot younger, but I've always really, I just love the sets and the contrast of the, like, cozy little cottage in England versus that super glam mansion in California. And in this case, I think I would definitely choose the English cottage and Jude Law over the California stuff.
But the California one is very glam.
It is very glam. You can have the California one.
Thank you, Sophie. And then we could do a swap over the holidays.
Perfect.
No, but yours would be so cute during the holidays.
I know.
Oh, it's just so hard to choose.
It is. But again, this one has, like, two very powerful career women. Mm-hmm. Like, we have Cameron Diaz, who's a film trailer maker, and somehow that's launched her into, like, extreme wealth.
Yes.
She, like, designs trailers, I think.
Yeah.
And then Iris, is she a journalist? That's Kate Winslet. I think she does some sort of
journalism. Yeah, she is a journalist in the English countryside.
Oh, wow. That's so nice.
But they're both having, like, troubles in their love lives, so they switch homes for the holidays over this, like, website where you can switch homes.
Yes.
And then they end up finding their own, like, love connections on either end, like, once Iris goes to California and Amanda goes to the countryside. And so it's kind of has that, like, Parent Trap feel in that way of, like, putting someone into a different environment and kind of getting that comedic element of it. So strange to see Miss Big Shot Amanda. They're both such big shots and, like, successful in their own right, but switching their environments where they're so used to something else and then seeing them adjust but then fall for those places. So endearing.
I know. And even, like, again, it makes sense that it was written with, like, their characters in mind, or, like, who's playing who, because, like, I don't know, Cameron Diaz is just such a California, like, blonde. Like, she just, like, would be designing trailers in LA. Yes. And then, like, Kate Winslet is just so, like, beautiful. And, like, I think of her as, like, almost a period piece actress. And so that feels more, like, I don't know, in tune with the English countryside.
Yeah, totally.
And so even just seeing the actresses, like, in these new environments, I feel like without even knowing anything about their characters, you're almost a little bit like, oh, what are they doing here?
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, and for this set, I wanted to see, like, who was designing all of these, like, sets and the decorations and everything. And it seems like Nancy Myers, like, does have certain people that she works with, like, for production design and, like, set decoration and stuff. Beth Rubino is, like, a set designer that she does work with. And she didn't do The Holiday. But she did design for It's Complicated and Something's Gotta Give. I don't know if I haven't seen those ones.
I love them.
But I do want to watch them. And I did read a little bit about, like, what she was saying, like, working with Nancy. Because Nancy, again, like, she's not, it's important to note that while she has become an icon of, like, what it is to have a Nancy Myers house, like, there are so many hands and minds behind, like, that actual role of the production design and the set decoration that, like, isn't mainly hers. Like, she's writing it. But Nancy, from what I understand, even though she's, like, the writer, she's, like, contributing a lot of herself that seeps through into these other sections of the filmmaking process. And Rubino says that, like, on sets of these other films that she's worked with, Nancy contributes a lot of, like, detail-oriented aspect of the set design and, like, the rooms and the houses and stuff like that. And also her sense of style does seep through a lot. And through her writing, apparently her vision is very clear for that, which I think, like, goes to show she does have, like, a specific style. And through her writing, she's able to express that, which is just speaks to her talent.
Yeah.
Because now it's become, like, a total phenomenon of, like, the trend of a Nancy Myers. I was looking it up and it's like I'm trying to find, like, the Nancy Myers key styles, like, as her role as writer or whatever. But all that you get when you search that up is Nancy Myers style interiors, how to bring the aesthetic to your kitchen and home, or how to recreate the iconic Nancy Myers aesthetic in your home. 8 rooms that exude charm and comfort.
Yeah, no, I think that really speaks to, like, her strength, like, as a writer, like, to not have, like, you know, someone you work with consistently. Like, obviously there's this set designer who's popped up in a few, but it's not like a, like, partnership. So, like, clearly she must, like, have a pretty, like, visual heavy writing style, or at least be able to convey this, like, sense really well through her writing, which is, like,
because now
to aspire to.
It's totally, like, attributed to her, like, that comfort of those houses that you just want to curl up in, like the cottage, but those also these, like, elegant neutral color tones and open concept houses. They're just so her and so iconic, and now they're completely in style.
I know, it's true. And even she did, like, an Architectural Digest, like, welcome to my home.
Really?
Or not a video, but, like, an article.
Okay,
yeah. The pictures of the houses are like, well, yep, that's of course where Nancy Myers lives. Like, I honestly feel like you could guess it. And it's so true. It's become such a trend. And I feel like even for some reason more recently, which maybe because of, like, the pandemic or something, everyone, like, was focusing more on where they're living, like, in their home or something.
Yeah.
But I feel like back when everything was premiering, I don't think she was as, like, much of a phenomenon as it just shows, like, I don't know, her work is timeless. And, like, even, like, you're watching Father of the Bride, which is made, like, over 30 years ago, and you're thinking, like, oh my gosh, let me live in this house. Yeah. It doesn't seem dated or, like, I don't know, I think she does a great job at not just relying on trends of the time, but just always staying true to herself, which is really nice.
So timeless. I feel like that's such a part of the sets, but also just the stories.
Yeah, totally. I know, and even with some of the movies that, like, we're not discussing directly today, but, like, with, like, It's Complicated and Something's Gotta Give, those are, like, focus on older women and their love lives, like, it's single older women who are, like, I think in both of those they're divorced. And I think, like, that is, or I am pretty confident that that's her bringing her own story, like, to the screen and being able to, like, write something that's so personal. I don't know, and it really, like, empowers women, because obviously your life doesn't end, like, when you're 22 in the case of Annie Banks and Father of the Bride, like, getting married after your 4-month exchange, which is kind of crazy. But, like, women, I feel like in all of her movies are allowed to age. And I mean, even, like, in the holiday, I actually don't know. But Cameron Diaz was already married, right? I think, like, she was going through a divorce.
Yeah.
And so it's not just that typical, like, there's this naive 19-year-old who's falling in love. Or it's like, these are established women who have careers and aren't, like, and aren't sacrificing that once they meet a man.
I love that. Yeah. That brings into, like, one of my favorite lines of the movie is when Arthur Abbott is like a side character in when Kate Winslet's character goes to California and meets Arthur Abbott, like this old film director, I think. And he's talking to her about her love life. And he says, Iris, in the movies, we have leading ladies and we have the best friend. You, I can tell, are a leading lady. But for some reason, you're behaving like the best friend. And she says, you're so right. You're supposed to be the leading lady of your own life, for God's sake. And I think, like, Nancy Meyers movies have these ways of making her leading ladies be so ambitious, but also so full of, like, love and compassion while balancing these, like, crazy professional lives as journalists and trailer makers and fashion designers and, like, exploring that parts of themselves, but also, like, all in such comforting and charming ways and really relatable stories. Something you don't often see, like that balance, like it's a lot of films, there's like a divide between like the professional woman versus like the comfort, like homemaker or something like that. Yeah, but she's able to combine and like give these leading ladies a story that we don't often see. And then even within the script itself is like empowering someone to be recognized that they are the leading lady. There's just so many layers to that that I love.
But
yeah.
No, that's so true. And I feel like even she almost like takes some of the qualities that are often attributed to like working women in the negative sense where it's like, oh, they're so like emotionless and whatever. And in going back to The Parent Trap, Meredith Blake, I feel like, who we don't really know much about her job, and she's really just like a gold digger is like her main thing. But she's kind of given those, like, she's very like scathing and she has no emotions and all she's in it is for the money, which like I feel like especially back in the day, that's how like the working professional woman would have been portrayed, versus Elizabeth James, who actually is the working professional woman, is like this very like soft, kind, motherly figure, which I love that she didn't have to sacrifice that, or like that Nancy Meyers didn't make her sacrifice that part of her.
Yeah. So amazing. I love like all the different representations, and they're not all the same, which is also something that makes it so special. Like in all the movies, there's these differences, but also similarities that you can draw.
Yeah.
You really get like the spectrum of like womanhood over the course of her movies.
Totally.
So, you know, so nice to see.
Yeah. And then even in The Holiday, where like Jude Law is the doting father, like like he's the more, I don't know, I don't actually know what his career is, but in my mind, like, he's a stay-at-home dad for his girls.
Oh, yeah, his girls.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Flipping a lot of stereotypes, I feel like, on their head.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
This movie, The Holiday, also has, like, a really epic score because it's from Hans Zimmer.
Damn.
Who he also, close communication with Nancy Meyers. Again, her work, like, seeping into other aspects of the filmmaking. He said he went to her to have her explain like the emotions each character were going through in the scene so that he could compose like the right scores for that. And a really iconic one that he put together was Maestro. So we'll give a listen to that. I'm sure you'll recognize it. All right. Thank you so much for listening to The Real World. We'll be back again, same time, same place, 4 to 5 next Wednesday.
Yes.
That was Nancy Meyers' filmography a little bit. 3 films. but thank you for tuning in. And thank you to our special guest, Sophie, yes. for coming up with that idea and coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Hope to have you back soon. All right. Thanks for listening and see you next week.
See ya.